Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSillaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, August 2nd, 2009, and this is show number 217. Well, hey, if you haven't checked out the Mac Roundtable yet, or lately, you have got to check out show number 67 when it comes out. We welcomed our newest cast member, John F. Braun, from the Mac Geek Gab podcast. We also had Katie Floyd of the Mac Power Users and Don McAllister of Screencast Online. And me. We did what we're calling the peripheral show. We debated the merits of different makes of displays, printers, keyboards, and mice. Okay, I know that sounds dorky, but it was really fun. Anything done with John F. Braun is hilarious, trust me. We had so much fun, I left a message for all the other members and said, we had so much fun, we're going to spin off our own show. We'll wait and see how they feel about that. Anyway, we even had a healthy debate about the merits and demerits of the shift lock key. Doesn't get any better than that. Anyway, check it out at macroundtable.com.
Dumb questions.
How come I always have to?
It's time for Dumb Question Corner.
Well, Chris Scott from Rockford, Michigan, sent in a great dumb question. Here's what he said. I'm a recent convert to the Apple family. I would like some help on disk image files. I'm used to the Windows file download management, but unsure how to handle disk image files and properly getting the programs running and what to do with my expanding downloads folder. Love the show. Chris, this is a fantastic question, because there really isn't an analog to disk images on Windows, at least that I've figured out, since I'm sort of a slider back and forth these days. I'm going to give you the facts as I know them and the philosophy to which I subscribe. When you download most applications for the Mac, you get a file with a .dmg extension. This is the disk image file. If you're running Safari, there's an option in the preferences to choose whether or not to let the operating system open safe files after downloading or not. There are dangers related to allowing this, even though it is convenient. Imagine if there were an exploited Safari, it happens, that allowed someone to download malicious code to your machine, it would be able to open up and even run on its own, and then you'd be very sorry and sad. So I do recommend not checking that box. Firefox handles this a little bit differently. It asks you if you want to just save the file or if you'd like to go ahead and let it be opened by either Mac OS X or StuffIt Expander if you have that. So you kind of have a choice on every single time what you want to do with it. Either way, at some point, since you've intentionally downloaded this particular file, you'll want to go ahead and open it. When you open a DMG file, it'll mount a disk on your desktop that looks like a removable hard drive or an external hard drive, I should say. Open up that fake disk and you may find an application installer, but that's really becoming more and more rare these days. More often now, you'll actually find two things, the application you want and an alias to your applications folder. All you have to do is drag the application onto that alias and boom, your application is installed. That's all there is to it. For the newly switched to the Mac, this can be a confusing thing. I've even fallen for this myself. What can happen is you open the application from within the disk image, not realizing that you haven't actually copied it to your real disk yet. Later, you eject the disk image, or maybe you reboot and it's not there anymore. And much later than that, you're sitting there going, wait a minute, where the heck is that application? I know I downloaded it. Where did it go? So make sure you remember to drag the file onto the applications folder first thing. Don't hesitate before you do that, or later on you're going to be really confused. There's one instance where I don't drag it from that DMG file. I'm a crazy downloading experimenter person, and I'm just always bringing stuff on. I realized lately that I can just launch applications from the disk image files, and if it turns out to be kind of a lame app that I don't want to keep, I don't have to keep it, and I never installed it, and so it's not in my way, so I can simply eject that disk, and it's gone. I think that's kind of a good way to go. Now, it does seem hard to believe that you can just drag applications like this. I had trouble believing it myself when they first started letting us do it that way. It actually means that in some cases, you can even drag applications from one Mac to another Mac without doing any installation at all. You just go here. I want this one. I want it over here. Works perfectly. All right, so back to normal people land. You've dragged the application to your applications folder and ejected the mounted image. That's the end of the fact-based portion of this dumb answer. Now it's time for the philosophy portion of our show. Your second question was what to do with your ever-expanding downloads folder. I used to keep every disk image file and burn the downloads folder to a CD frequently, thinking that if I ever had to rebuild after a disk crash, I would use those images to reinstall everything. But then it occurred to me that most, if not all of those applications would probably have already been updated by the time I got around to reinstalling them from that CD. And usually the kinds of files that you've downloaded as a DMG are pretty quick to download anyway, so I would probably want to install them from the images coming off the web. So since then, I've been kind of hit and miss. Sometimes I keep them for a while, and a lot of times I just go into the downloads folder and go, dang, that's getting big. That's wasting a lot of disk space. So I'll sort it by size, and I'll dump the top, 50%. And once I get down that far, I get too lazy, and I leave the rest of it just sitting there. So that's kind of my philosophy on how to do it. I'm sure there are people out there who actually have robust processes for that sort of thing. So if you do want to be careful and save something, what you really want to save is those license keys you get with the applications when you pay your shareware fees. I know everybody here pays their shareware fees, right? Well, those are worth saving in three places, including an offsite backup, because that's where you paid actual money to have those applications. So keep your license keys, and you can throw away the installers if you like. I hope that clears up the whole disk image mystery for you and everyone else who had the same question, Chris. Thanks for asking. Have you ever had a web page you'd like to send to someone? I know, you should probably send them the link, but what if you want to spoon feed them instead and send them the whole darn page? Have them receive it where they can have clicking links right like a web page even though it's in their email. Cedric Brown did that very thing to me. He emailed me a web page from the LA Times all about how Blue microphones are doing. Remember, I have a blue icicle that I use? It's from the Blue Microphone people. Anyway, I asked him how the heck he did that. Here's what he wrote back. Elementary, my dear Allison. As long as you're using Safari, you just go Command-I, and Apple Mail comes to the front and opens a new mail window, and the web page appears in the window. On most transplanted pages, you can then place your insertion point just before or after the web page, and you can start typing your text. On some pages that have dark background colors, this can be a problem. What seems to happen is you place the insertion point and you hit two or three returns and elements on the page, sure enough, move downward, but the background color does move a bit. So in those, you can just send a second message right after. The real tricky one is Wikipedia because the little puzzle globe is a link, and if you set your insertion point without activating the link and then you have to hit your returns to create some typing space, you just seem to duplicate the puzzle globes. I'm still using Tiger, so your results may vary. Well, this looked really swell, so I popped open Safari and I hit Command-I, and I got an error message saying that if I wanted to send the page to Mail, I would have to make Mail my default mail program. Well, of course, Mail already is my default mail program. I popped open Google, typed in Safari, Command-I, Mail, and the first link was to the Apple forums. Why don't I just start there? Anyway, that's where the answers always are. In there, Hawaiian Starman explained how to solve this problem. Go back into Mail. In the General panel, select another email app as your primary email program. Close the panel, reopen it, and now select Mail, then restart Safari. Try the Command-I. I executed that elementary maneuver, and now I, too, can send entire web pages to my friends and family. That is, unless they're smart enough to turn off HTML in their mail program, which is a dangerous thing that you're not supposed to have turned on anyway, because it turns out you can embed malicious code inside HTML. Well, I assume by now you've already bought ScreenSteps because you've learned over the last few months what a great tool it is to create gorgeous documentation without hardly any effort. You're making screenshots, you're adding cool annotations, especially those sequence balls that indicate the order in which your learners should click and add information. You're printing to PDF, you're making HTML, heck, you might even be exporting to Word with the new version. Your associates, friends, and family are gaining from your vast knowledge on Windows or the Mac. But you want to do an even better job. Well, the guys over at ScreenSteps know how you feel, so they've been holding these cool free webinars and even recording them so you can watch them at your own convenience. The last one is fantastic. It's called Why Your Documentation is Useless and How to Fix It. I love the title. These guys have actually worked creating documentation in their past lives. That's what they did for a living. And because of the pain of it, that's why they created ScreenSteps to solve their own problems. So they know how to do good documentation, so they really know how to do it right. Go check out their latest webinar at the link in the show notes. And if by some oversight you've actually forgotten to buy ScreenSteps, don't forget to use the coupon code NOCILLA, that's my name spelled backwards, all capital letters, for 25% off when you go over to screensteps.com. Next up, we've got a really high-tech hack. You better put on your nerd glasses, make sure your pocket protector is secured, and maybe put a book about fast Fourier transforms on your desk within easy reach. Drew wrote in with a link to a hack that solves a real problem. Remember, my only complaint with the Verizon MiFi was that when you plug it into your laptop to charge it, it no longer functions as a Wi-Fi hotspot. Instead, it reverts to a modem, so you have to launch the VZ Access software and you're no longer sharing the signal, but instead keeping it selfishly to yourself. Well, I want to be able to keep using it as Wi-Fi, but still charge the darn thing. Or maybe you're at a friend's house and you want to charge your iPhone, but you don't want it to launch iTunes and try to sync. There's a ton of devices you just like to have charge over USB and stop launching all those automatic things. Well, Drew sent me to the folks over at Instructables.com, and they've come up with a scientifically proven method to solve this. Scientifically proven means I tried it and it works. Here's what you do. You get yourself some thick paper. Not cardboard, but not cheesy paper. You cut out a little form, and they've got a diagram on the website, and it places a little tongue of paper down inside the USB connector on the cable. You see, there's four pins inside a USB connector, and the outer two are associated with charging, while the inner two are the ones that send the signal to the computer to start doing crazy things with the operating system. So the width of this little tongue has to be precise so that it just covers up those two middle pins. Just to make this a little bit scientific, I did include a diagram in the show notes illustrating the pinouts. You can see that pins 2 and 3 in the middle carry data, while pin 1 carries plus 5 volts DC of power, and pin 4 is the grounding pin. Now it was time to see if this crazy hack could actually work. I got out my trusty Pilot mechanical pencil and a metric ruler, and I did some drafting. You know, I did drafting in college, by the way, because back then you had to take it to get a job in mechanical engineering. Anyway, I cut out the little thingy, I folded it just like they showed me in the tutorial, and I plugged it in. It is a little bit snug when you do that, but even as we speak, I'm using the MiFi pocket router as a Wi-Fi hotspot while it's plugged in and charging. This is such a cool thing to know about, and I plan on keeping my little wad of paper in the case for the MiFi to wow my friends and to use it daily. By the way, the last line in the tutorial says that they take no responsibilities for any fires or damage caused by the use of this hack. Head on over to Instructables, and you too can endanger your electronics. Thanks, Drew. Great tip. Scott Rutowski sent in a review of TuneWiki. This is an iPhone application that allows you to listen to streaming music while watching subtitled lyrics translated into 40-plus languages. Let's hear what Scott has to say about TuneWiki from TuneWiki.com.
Highlighted button.
G'day to all the NoSilicast listeners and Allison. It's Scott from Sydney, Australia. And I just wanted to do a very quick review of a great iPhone app called TuneWiki, which you can get through the App Store. Now, for the most part, the app's very accessible, and it works very, very well with VoiceOver on the iPhone, which is what I also use. I'm actually recording this review on the iPhone using the Voice Memo app, so there you go. Now, what I like about TuneWiki is the fact that it's a great program, it's free, it's got some great internet stations from shoutcast.com. You can look up the top 500 stations. There's all the different genres like rock, pop, jazz, oldies, things like that. And you can also add your favorite stations into the favorites tab of the application as well. The other feature about this product or this app is the lyrics feature. So any streaming song that you're listening to from any of the stations in the directory, the lyrics appear on the screen of the iPhone, so you can sing along to your favorite song there if you want to. That's not why I like the program. I like the ability to listen to any of the radio channels in the Shoutcast directory. For the most part, the application does work well with VoiceOver on the iPhone. And I just think that they've done a good job, the developer of this application, and I'd encourage everyone to get hold of it, take it for a spin, and enjoy this fine app. And there are other similar apps, but out of all the other radio applications that I've tried on the iPhone, I think that this one is the best application out there. So take it for a spin, give it a try, and thanks for listening.
VU stop button.
Well, thanks, Scott, for a great review. I can't believe the quality of the audio recordings from the iPhone 3GS. Your voice sounded fantastic. Well, maybe it's because I'm a sucker for an Australian accent, you know. Well, thanks again, and I put a link in the show notes to the download link from iTunes for TuneWiki. Okay, so you know what a sucker I am for screen capture tools, right? How many have I actually reviewed? Like 236 so far? And yet somehow I just don't get tired of finding new ones and comparing features, maybe because this space has really matured so much in the last 4 years. So far I've been sticking with Sketch after each trial of another tool, but yet another challenger is on the stage. It's called Voila, and it's available from globaldelight.com. Well, I thought about just dinking around with it like I usually do, but I'd probably just take a couple of quick snaps, yawn, and never learn what else it could do. Now, don't think crazy talk like I actually read the manual or something. I mean to say that I broke down and read the bulleted list on the Global Delight website of what it said it could do. Right off the bat, I saw some things listed that I have not seen done before in any screen capture utility. Voila can capture full-screen games and full-screen movies. Now, that's pretty tricky. How about not just one region on the screen, but multiple regions? I have wanted to do that so many times. They also say it can do multiple windows. Fantastic. And get this, background windows. The one that's not in front. Well, they started talking about capturing objects, and I got kind of lost at that point, but I actually figured that out later, so you'll hear about it when I get there. One of the signs of a great screen capture tool is that if it can capture drop-down menus, Voila can do that and contextual menus. Voila doesn't just capture plain old rectangles. You can do triangles, circles, ellipses, polygons, and they even let you capture freehand regions. That's so awesome. I can't wait to try that. I'm dying to dig in, but I must keep reading. They say it can do web pages, cameras, and even multiple screens. Okay, I thought I was done reading, but that's just the screen capture options. They have a section on manipulation before capture, web page capture, webcam capture, and then I found annotation, tools and effects, sharing options, and organization options. Yikes! They might as well have written a manual. The list of features is longer than most manuals. Well, I had a gap between I read all about Voila and when I started the review, but I kept Voila running in the background. The other day, I went to take a quick screen snapshot by using the traditional built-in Command-Shift-4 just to grab a shot in the clipboard so I could post it into an email to Bart. To my surprise, Voila had taken over Command-Shift-4, so when I did the screenshot, it put it in Voila, but it did not put it in my clipboard. I was a little bit annoyed that it took over what I wanted to do, but I thought this would give me motivation to actually dig into Voila. Right away, I ran into a problem. I could not figure out how to get the screenshot out of Voila. There's tons of options from which to choose. I can send it to iPhoto, I can mail it, I can publish it to the web, or I can print it. But what I wanted to do was paste it somewhere. So it turns out I wrote to the developer, and he explained that there's kind of a window in the middle that's kind of a workbench where you do stuff to the photo, and then there's a scroll bar down at the bottom that's got all the snaps that you've taken down below. You can actually drag it from there into the thing you wanted. So it does work, but I just didn't figure it out right away. Yeah, I know. Shut up about reading the manual. Not going to do it. So keep moving. So, let's see, I was particularly excited about the ability to do a two-piece screenshot because ScreenSteps does not do that, and I would love sometimes to be able to put two menus side by side, like do this and this, and then have one description down below. So I thought I'd be able to do it, and that should work, so we'll see where I can get it to work next. We'll work on that. Well, next up, I tried out the EyeSight capture. I clicked on the EyeSight menu button, but unfortunately, it decided that I meant to use the Bluetooth camera, the BT1 that I reviewed a little while ago, instead of my EyeSight. Now, I actually have two EyeSights, one on my MacBook Pro and one on my cinema display. But unfortunately, Voila didn't seem to realize that either one of those existed. Now, when I wrote the show notes, I was pretty mad at looking at Voila, and I was writing back and forth to Gaurav Barad and trying to figure out how to do it. And he was saying, okay, well, we'll look into it. And he was being really open-minded. But then I figured out it's actually the BT camera causing it. Even though it wasn't turned on, I discovered that the BT1 driver was running in the background. I tried to turn it off. I actually killed the process. But when I tried to access my camera, boom, it came back on again. It turned the software turned itself on. Well, I was complaining to Bart about this software, and I was about to write a nasty message off to the guys from Global Delight, but it turns out there was a little message saying that there was a driver update available. I downloaded the driver update, and there's a little button that says disable the BT1. As soon as I disabled it, it actually worked fine, and voila, worked perfectly fine with my EyeSight camera. Now, I still can't switch between the two of them. I did have to, I can't use both of my EyeSights, but it did the internal one, so that's good enough. This was a really good thing to learn because I was having trouble last week with Stickam in the live chat because it wouldn't recognize my EyeSight camera. It kept looking at the BT1. Well, it was the same problem. So now I'm able to enable and disable the BT1 at will, which is wonderful. All right, back to Voila. I decided to play with a few of the things that excited me, like being able to capture non-rectangular areas for the screen. That turned out to be great fun. I played with a polygon and freehand option, so you could basically draw a shape, you know, cut out a person if you want to. I could see great utility in this. Cropping things out of other images comes up frequently. Well done, Voila. Another thing Voila does very well, and I can't figure out how the heck it can do this, is selecting a window that's actually behind the other windows. You simply click the object button. See, I told you you'd figure out what object was. And as you hover over windows, they turn blue. Hover over a partially hidden window, and the area it's taking up will also turn blue. Hit a carriage return, and voila, you've got a snap of a hidden window. I should mention that when you're capturing, after you've selected an area, either with one of the geometric tools or the object selection tool, you get some extra options above the selected area. You can cancel selection, discard previous selection, do a timed selection, you know how I love that, or simply change it back to the mode where you can start a new selection. Nice non-committal option. I experimented with the timed selection and it worked really well. You get a countdown of 5 seconds to bring up your desired information before it captures the snap. I mentioned to Gouris Barad, and I'm really making up that pronunciation. He told me just call him Guru. Anyway, I wrote to Guru and I said, boy, it'd be really cool if you could change that countdown time. And he gently pointed out that you can change it in the preferences. You can change it up to 20 seconds. Well, I had read the manual on how to capture menus. If you click the menu button, voila simply disappears, and you're kind of given no clues as to what to do next. In reading the manual, it said to select the menu you want to capture and then hit Command-Shift-M. This worked, but it didn't capture the name of the menu, unfortunately, which means in documentation you'd have to take 2 separate snaps in order to get the menu name as well. I suggested this as an enhancement, and Guru assured me that they're working on it. They're also going to put in the keystroke combination into the menu so you'll know to use Command-Shift-M without reading the manual. Of course, now I've said it enough times that I'm never going to forget it. Probably the most unique attribute of Voila, as I read about the capture side, was its ability to capture multiple areas. They have a feature where you can capture multiple screens. I selected full screen, I clicked on one monitor, clicked the plus sign, and then clicked on the second monitor. I hit a carriage return, and voila, there was an image showing both screens, and they were oriented as I have them. So I had one kind of up or to the right of the other, and they look just like that, and there's a window actually crossing both screens. It shows seamlessly across them. This is a really, really cool feature. So you could do a full, you know, double wide width. It's really neat. I'd put a picture of that in the show notes. Well, I wanted to see if I could select multiple objects or areas and have them stitched together because I thought that's what they said it could do, but it's not quite how Voila lets you do it. Instead, they have what they call image annotation. We might want to take a vote on the right name for this because that doesn't really ring a bell to me what that actually means. So he said, well, what name would be better for that? So let me describe what it does and maybe you guys can give me some suggestions. After I watched the video Guru sent me to understand how to do it, I understood that they mean when they call it image annotation, they mean the ability to use images to enhance other images. In their video, they pin one image so it stays selected on the workbench that I talked about, and then you can drag other images on top of it. You can rotate them and resize them. It was right here when I realized that this application is so much more than an image capture tool. This is a tool for creating artwork, like what would be appropriate for magazine copy or classy images in fancy pants websites. You can modify these images by adding text and arrows like other applications, But you can also add filters like monochrome and sharpen, and you can mess with the edges and put callouts in like voice balloons and you can do adjustments to the exposure and color tone, all kinds of things. You could really get creative with creating new artwork. You have access to the traditional imaging tools, sharpen, hue, saturation, those kinds of things too. Another cool feature is they say Voila can capture full screen games and movies. I think there's a little bug to be worked out here, because every video tool I tried, when I captured the full screen, it first kicked me out of full screen and then took the picture. Now, Guru's looking into this for me. He said it does have a problem with QuickTime, so the fact that I did it in iTunes and QuickTime, that's actually both using QuickTime, so those don't count as two experiments, and he knew that one wasn't working. But I tried it in the DVD player, and that didn't work either, so maybe it uses the QuickTime engine. He said if I wasn't so lazy and would try VLC, well, he didn't put it that way, that's me talking. He said if I tried it in VLC, it should probably work. So anyway, he's working on that. It's kind of a cool feature. Not something to drop dead that it didn't work right for me, though. Well, I was thrilled with the way Voila can capture web pages. You can use the buttons to capture the current page you have open in Safari, but not Firefox. It works with Safari. And it captures the entire page, which is really cool. Ooh, I think I should go back and capture an entire web page. Like, find the longest web page I can, like one of mine. I should email it to Cedric. That's a good idea. Anyway, there's an even cooler way, though. Is Voila has actually got its own built-in web browser. It even includes a Google toolbar inside it. And from there, you can actually, you just put in the URL you want to go to, and you can select regions of a web page while it's scrolling. So let's say you don't want the whole web page, but you don't want just what's showing. You want, say, 1.5 pages worth. You could select that. I've never seen that in any of the capture tools I've tried. Back to the callouts you can do. They have a bunch of silly sort of gimmicky ones. For example, you can add pow and bang, kind of a la the old Batman series from the 1960s, if you're old enough to remember that. One of my favorite tools they have is called skew. You can skew horizontally or vertically, and what this does is it kind of makes the image look like it's fading away from you on one side. I really like the look. It's really, really effective. It's just a very, very neat effect. I should mention that all of the tools in Voila are destructive editing. Each time you finish applying an effect, let's say like skew, for example, they ask you if you're sure you want to flatten the image. Flattening means that all of the effects are embedded in the JPEG as bits. They're not going to be vector lines or anything you can drag around later. You can't undo the skew. You can't put the color back to normal after making it monochrome. I wish they had non-destructive editing. I'm beginning to expect it these days, they should just give me it. So I, of course, have no clue how hard that is to do or if it's even possible in the kind of tool they're creating, but now I want it. Well, Voila is an incredibly deep tool with a ton of capabilities. Would you believe I haven't even scraped the surface on it yet? For example, I haven't even gotten into the organizer function on how you can store and tag and make smart collections, or how they tell you where you've shared your images, or how to publish to iPhoto, Mail, publish to Flickr. The list goes on and on. The great news is that the folks at Global Delight have made a ton of instructional videos that'll show you exactly how to work with the tool, all without ever cracking open the manual. I put a link in the show notes to their page with all the videos so you can go see Voila in action. Voila is $39.95 for a single user. It sounds a little bit steep, but think about how much it does. Or you can pay just $5 more for two Macs, or you can get a family pack for up to 5 computers for $64. They have educational and government discounts and even upgrade plans to go from single to family packs. Gurus Bharad has generously offered to give all of the listeners $15 off. That makes it only $25 for Voila for the single user. Isn't that cool? That's a 38% discount. All you have to do is use the coupon code NOSILICAST, and he wrote it in all capital letters, to get the discount. Get this, though. He also said I could give away 2 free licenses. So how about you each send me in an email entitled simply Voila, and spell it right so my mail rule catches it. Send it in before August 21st, and I'll do that random number generator thing again and pick the two winners. Now, I originally thought that I should just offer it to the first two, but then I realized the chat room would snag it up right away. And, well, they are the Uber fans. I thought maybe I should give everyone else a chance too, because maybe it's the middle of the night for you when I'm recording. I should tell you two things. Gurus Bharad sent in that thing about giving away the free licenses and the $15 off, after I wrote this review. So this whole review was not written knowing that we were going to get some free stuff, but I really appreciate him doing that. And the other thing is I did go back and do a double image. So I was saying you can capture two images and put them together. I used that in the graphic that I created for the explaining the USB hack. So I'm already using things it can do. You know you have someone you can believe in when your knee-jerk reaction is to call them in moments of need. Like when you stick a magnet to your brand new MacBook Pro and your hand instinctively reaches for Pat Dengler on speed dial. I feel that way about Honda Bob. My daughter lives a few hours away and she called me to tell me she was low on oil and asked what she's supposed to buy. Well, geez, the last time I changed my own oil myself was when I had a 1976 Honda Civic and I know it was 10W40, but pretty darn sure those things have changed since 1978. So what do you think I told her to do? Call Honda Bob, of course. His faith in Honda Bob has been earned over the 30 years he's been coming to our house and taking care of our Hondas and Acuras. Over the past several weeks, you've heard the testimonial, so you know it's not just me being some kind of weird zealot about his services. It's just a shame that he doesn't take care of more types of cars or that he doesn't have an international franchise business. But if you're lucky enough to live in the LA or Orange County areas and you do have a Honda or Acura, give Honda Bob a call at 562-531-2321 or send him an email at hdabob@aol.com. HDA Bob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda, Acura, or Honda Worldwide. Well, it's time for another exciting episode of Chit Chat Across the Pond with Bart Bouchatz from BartB.ie. But we're both a little sleepy and stuff this week, huh, Bart?
Yeah, I spent more time on trains in the last 2 days than I care to remember. You know the way if you're on a boat for too long and when you sit still, it feels like you're still moving side to side?
Yeah.
Feels like every now and then it feels as if I'm still on a train, you know, gently bouncing up and down.
It's like sea legs, only train legs. I've never heard of that.
Yeah. Well, it's quite similar, I suppose.
We went to San Diego to visit my daughter and my mother, who both had birthdays. But Steve and Kyle decided we should drive back at midnight last night. So I'm sleepy.
If you had to get up early, that would have been worse.
Why? Of course I had to get up early. I had to get up at 7 to go running so I could be back in time to record with you.
Yeah, but 7 is normal for you. Yeah, I don't think it's normal for humans to be up at 7 on a Sunday, but for the Sheridans, it seems normal.
It does. I mean, I had tons of sleep. I'm sleepy. Had too much fun. We had a good time, though. Had a great birthday for both of them, so that was good.
Yeah, well, I was down at a wedding, and I had a good time, too. And, I mean, as much as I whine about being on trains for too long, infinitely better to be on a train for a whole day than to be on a bus.
Ooh, or driving yourself.
Yeah, I mean, all you have to do is sit there, and so on the intercity trains, you have a really big table, so you can actually take out a laptop if you want, although I tend to just look out the window. Because the rail network in Ireland tends to go cross-country, so just, you know, clean through the middle of nowhere, so yeah. Actually right out in nature. It's actually quite nice.
Oh, it sounds beautiful. Do they have power on the trains for you to plug in a laptop?
They do on the modern intercities, yeah. So there's two plugs under every table. So two people can even play with their laptops.
Sweet. That sounds really nice way to travel. We don't do that well in LA at all.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, you have two seats. You know, the seats come in groups of four, two facing each way with a table between them. And then the window is the full length of those four seats and the table.
Oh, nice.
So it really is like you're sitting in a glass thing. I mean, you don't notice the fact that there's joins between the windows because they're behind your head. It's just the absolute perfect way to travel.
Oh, it sounds gorgeous. Well, when we ever come to Ireland, we should do that.
Yes, absolutely. I don't have a car, so I can't drive you anywhere.
So we'll be on the train.
Exactly.
Either that or on the back of your bicycle. That would be good. Me and Steve.
You and Steve. So one on the handlebars. One.
Oh, I can send some Photoshop opportunities right now.
And A&E having lots of work.
There you go. Well, all right. Let's get to work here and quit screwing around. What's new in the security front, Bart?
Well, the big news is iPhone OS 3.0.1 has come out, and this fixes a really, 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 I could go on for some time, but no amount of reallys would actually be enough. Nasty bug.
Ooh.
This is not one of those patches that you should do. Who are those two guys that we always give off about who tell people not to bother patching?
The MacNerd News Boys.
Yeah, MacNerd News Boys, if you're listening to this, patch now.
So what's it fix?
Okay, this is sort of your worst possible case scenario. No user interaction at all, and someone remotely can completely and utterly take over your phone. They can execute arbitrary code as root from anywhere on the planet without you doing anything.
Yeah. How?
SMS.
But we don't have SMS on our phones.
Not MMS, SMS.
Oh. SMS, regular text messaging then.
Regular old text messaging. You send a specially crafted text message and you own the phone. Aww. As in, you know, the hacking sense of own, as in you have taken over the phone.
So what can you do with the phone if you own it?
Well, you have root access to the phone, so you can do anything you like. If you wanted to
calls?
Turn it into a worm, you could simply have it propagate itself to everyone in the address book.
Oh.
Which would cost you a pretty penny if you were infected by such a worm and you didn't have a texting plan.
Oh, yeah. Or a 200 texting plan like I do.
Yeah, a small texting plan. If you have more than 200 contacts, then you're pretty hosed as well. So they're not good. Like, absolutely, positively not good. There is, thankfully, a patch. So it was an important one for Apple to fix promptly, and they did.
Oh, okay. So for once, they got right on a security flaw?
Well, we don't know how voluntarily this was. The guy who discovered it is a very well-respected Apple security researcher. He's a chap called Charlie Miller. And Charlie basically went, right, yo, Apple, there's a major big security conference on in a couple of weeks. I am going to tell people about this flaw at that security conference. You have until then. And they got it out literally with like hours to spare.
Good for him. That's thank you to Charlie then.
Yeah, he's also called iPhone Charlie because he's found a lot of iPhone bugs. He's also the guy who's won those pwn-to-own laptops many, many times.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. Well, good. Good on him.
Yes, absolutely. He's a bit of an Apple hater, but he does a fantastic service to the community. So I'm actually a huge fan of his, but I don't think he's a huge fan of Max.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it. All right. Well, we had a new topic ready, but then another topic has preempted it, but we're going to try to cram two topics in here. So what's the... something bad happened today.
Yeah, I came home. I didn't have proper internet while I was away. I was in sort of the more extreme parts of Ireland. I was in the southwest of Ireland, and our hotel, it had Wi-Fi, but it was spotty. You know, you might get a connection for a little while, you might get a few emails out, but then it'd be gone again. And I decided not to keep too much in contact online because it was just infuriating. Signal had come, signal had go, signal had come, signal had go. I was like, I give up. So I came home and I fired up my RSS reader, which is NetNewsWire, which I have up until now been recommending at every opportunity I get. Absolute huge fan of the program.
Yeah, you've liked it forever.
I've been a user for... It used to be a paid-for program and then it went free. And I was already a user while it was paid for and I was so happy to pay for it. I think it was like $20 or $30. But I thought it was worth every cent. It was the best RSS program I have ever seen. And in one update, and I use the term very loosely, they have managed to remove every single benefit it has and turn it into a piece of dung. It is now a terrible RSS reader. I have never seen such a turnaround. It is unbelievable.
So what are the features that you did like and what changed?
Okay, so what I loved about it was the fact that it did syncing through a service called NewsGator. So you could set up your... all your feeds, and you could organize them in an infinitely deep set of folders. So you could have folders, subfolders, sub-subfolders, and nest them down as much as made sense. And anytime you would collapse a subfolder, it would treat that whole selection of RSS feeds as a single RSS feed and give you everything new together. So if I wanted to just see what all of my friends had done on Flickr, I would just look at that folder without ever having to expand it, and I would see everyone's new photographs together.
Okay.
And I would have similar, you know, I'd have a folder for computer news, a subfolder for Apple news, a subfolder in that, maybe for security news. I had them really nicely laid out in sometimes quite deep folder levels because I had well over 200 feeds. But it was manageable because they were all collapsed nicely into folders and subfolders. So actually, when you saw it on the screen, it all looked very manageable.
And when you were in the mood for photography, you could go follow those feeds. And yeah. When you wanted tech, you could go follow those.
Yeah, and I had a big one for work with all the security feeds I follow from all the various sources. So it was all very well organized, but it needed to have at least three, sometimes four levels of folders within folders within folders. And it worked perfectly. So well as that, it had the synchronization. So I could use NetNewsWire in work and at home and on the iPhone, and my red statuses were always kept in sync.
Yeah, sounds great.
It's also fantastic. It's a built-in browser with a really nice tab interface with the tabs or thumbnails down the side. So it's actually a very comfortable browser for browsing in. So you have your feeds in one tab on the left, then you have your web page area, and then on the right you had your tab bar. And it was actually a very comfortable interface. And it also had a feature called clippings. And what you would do is if you found a site you wanted to record for later, you would simply drag and drop the favicon onto something called your clippings folder. And it would drop it into the clippings, and those clippings were synchronized. So my normal every week workflow was I would read my news, and every time I came across a potential story for IMP Live on Fridays, I'd just drag and drop it onto my clippings. And then on Friday evening, I'd come home to write the show notes, and they would all have magically shown up on my home computer, and then I would simply create the show notes.
Oh, sweet. That's a great workflow then.
It worked so beautifully.
Uh-oh. That was just past tense, wasn't it?
Yep. It's all gone. You can now have no subfolders. The ability is gone.
No, come on.
So I now have a glop. Yeah, I'm deadly serious. I now have a glop of feeds. It is unmanageable.
So they did an update that erased that?
They did an update. Basically, NewsGator have decided to go out of business or something. I don't know why they've decided to shut down.
Wait, NewsGator hasn't shut down.
Yes, it has. According to what they told me.
No, NewsGator's a huge company. I mean, a big, serious...
Well, they're now using Google Reader as their backend.
Oh, okay. So for RSS... Really?
So for all of their clients, all of their software, and they have Windows-based software, they have NetNewsWire, they have web-based stuff, that all used to backend into their own service, which is why it was so good, because it was a really good backend that allowed you to synchronize everything you wanted, including all of your nested folders and your clippings and everything. That was all done through NewsGator's backend.
Yeah.
Which you used to have to pay for, and I was very happy to pay for it, but then they went free. Now they've simply discontinued it, and they've gone, NetNewsWire is now a front-end to Google Reader. Problem is, Google Reader doesn't have the feature set that NewsGator has.
Right.
So they've had to butcher NetNewsWire to make it only do what Google Reader does. At which point you're left going, what's the advantage of a Google Reader? It used to be really easy to say what the advantage was because you had all of these extra features. Clippings are gone. Not only can I not sync my clippings anymore, they deleted them. They're gone.
Oh, you're kidding me.
I had 50 things in there, some of which were for the next IMP, some of which were just things to keep a note of for the future. All gone.
Well, I got to say, I'm glad they did it to you on a Sunday, not on a Thursday.
Oh, goodness. Could you imagine if I was about to start the show notes for IMP?
And it was just not there?
Oh, Stu would kill me.
Wow.
So my workflow for IMP, I'm one of my favorite apps has now become utterly useless. I just cannot do the work for me anymore. I was a paying customer. And I would have happily kept being a paying customer. They thought it was better to go free. And now that obviously hasn't worked out since they're simply closing down the NewsGator service behind it. I'm exceptionally annoyed. Let's say I had been a paying customer, I would happily continue to be a paying customer. They were hands down the best. There was nothing that could compete with it. I looked into other ones from time to time, and I would never find the same feature set. And now I'm stuck that I need to find a new one, and I can't find anything with the same feature set. So if any of our listeners know of something, it would be very, very handy if you could tell me, has to do subfolders, has to do syncing, clippings feature will be really nice, although I can do without it. I can go back to copying and pasting those into Evernote and having them sync that way.
Right.
But the subfolders cannot do without. You just cannot manage 200 feeds without subfolders.
Now, when did they do this?
Over the weekend.
Oh. So you haven't
had... It just came out of the blue. There was no notice.
Holy cow. So you haven't had a lot of time to search yet. But based on the fact that you've been keeping an eye on it over the years?
Yeah, over the years what I would do is someone would recommend an RSS program. I'd go look at the webpage, have a look through the features, and within about two or three lines I'd know it was, no, this isn't going to do half of what NetNewsWire does, and I wouldn't go any further.
Right, right. And this isn't a case of where you could use the old version of the application because it's a service behind it that has
it's the NewsGator syncing service is what made it work. That's what made it... You know, that's what made it. It's as simple as that. Without that service, it was just a nice standalone app that you could use on one machine. But that's no good to me. I use too many computers.
Right, right, definitely.
So basically, homework for the listeners. If you know of any good clients out there, I'm all ears. Because I am now, Any suggestions on a simple way to synchronize bookmarks that regularly change? Because every week there'll be new clippings. I just delete them as I add them into the show notes and then add in more. Any suggestions, greatly appreciated, because I'm now one workflow short of a podcast.
Yeah, and by the way, please listen to this show as soon as you can on Sunday night, so by Monday morning, Bart wakes up to the answer, right?
That'd be lovely.
And it's going to work really well for me to tell them right now to listen to it now. That's going to work, right?
Yeah, that works really well. Temporal mechanics be damned.
I always have trouble with that time thing, right?
Well, we certainly do with our time zones.
Yeah, well, yeah, we're challenged that way. Well, hey, we got a whole other topic to throw in here, and we've been putting this one off for a couple of weeks, but I think it's kind of a fun one. Why don't you introduce it?
Yeah, so the concept is a very sensible concept. If you have to type the same thing over and over again, why bother? Why not have some software do it for you? That's the problem to be solved, really. So there are a couple of different potential solutions. There used to be one called RapidoWrite, which I have been using for a long time, and it's gone through some interesting transformations. Yeah. It was free, which is the version I have, and I kept a copy of it on an external hard drive, thankfully, because they stopped giving that away. Next, they bundled it that you had to buy one of their expensive products, and then it came free with one of their products.
Right.
And I remember looking at the list going, I don't want any of these programs except for RapidoWrite. And it's like, that would make RapidoWrite really expensive because I think their cheapest bit of software was $40.
Right,
so I'm not paying $40 for RapidoWrite. And then they changed the name of it. Do you remember what the new name is?
It's called,
I know you've reviewed it.
Right, it's called Presto. And now it's reasonably priced. It's $12 or 9 euros. So it's well-priced. And now they sell it standalone because I think there was a hue and cry about that. It's from appformac.com. But I have some opinions on that when we get to it.
Yeah, so they changed. They didn't just re-release it. They changed it. Shouldn't have changed it because it worked really well as RapidoWrite when it didn't not work.
Right.
We get to that later as well. Yeah. Then the other big player in the ring that I've come across, anyhow, is Text Expander, which is also one that you put me onto. Mm-hmm. And I have been using Text Expander for about a month now. And the two of them have very different approaches. And I'm not. I keep on flipping over and back between which approach I prefer.
So, what do you see as the big differences between those two?
Okay, so the biggest difference is that RapidoWrite. The idea is that you set up these shortcuts, and when you type a shortcut, a heads-up display appears, which gives you the option to insert. And if you have, say, you have a shortcut which has three or four possible endings, it'll give you a list, and you can scroll down and pick the one you want. Whereas that's RapidoWrite's technique, and I presume Presto is the same.
Yeah, except that's where they screwed it up. So just to set the groundwork here, I'm actually running, not by design, but because I can't figure out how to get it to stop. I'm running RapidoWrite.
Oh, I figured out how to get it to stop.
What's that?
I figured out how to get it to stop, but we'll get to that in a minute.
I'm running RapidoWrite and Text Expander, and I think I might also be running Presto at the same time.
Goodness.
Well, it doesn't matter. It's just whoever gets there first, I use their keystroke. But the biggest thing with Presto that they just, it's unworkable. I mean, it's the most ridiculous thing they did. You type in the keystroke, it brings up the little heads-up display, just like in RapidoWrite, and you have to arrow down to select the thing you want it to say. So I guess in theory you could have two or three key abbreviations that were close to each other or something, and you'd only typed part of the keystroke, and so it's going to give you a choice of a few, and so you arrow down and hit a return. So now
that's the RapidoWrite way, except on RapidoWrite the first option was always selected by default.
Yes, yes, but now you always have to scroll down. And the strange thing was when I wrote to the App for Mac people, Patrice wrote back and she said, "Oh, that's a problem with Leopard. We have to do that." And I'm thinking, yeah, but RapidoWrite doesn't do that. Quicksilver doesn't do that. Why is it you have to make me arrow down? So arrow down and return, which means I've just added two keystrokes, which is the whole purpose of one of these things, is to stop doing keystrokes.
Yeah, yeah.
Worthless.
So, yeah. It just beggars belief. We know they can do it right because RapidoWrite does it right. And I think the new contact them, didn't they say it was something to do with Leopard? And I'm sitting here going, yes. Well, I'm using RapidoWrite on Leopard and RapidoWrite still has it right. And you wrote that.
Exactly. Now, Rapido Write and Presto both do rich text formatting, which is kind of nice. So you can have colors and fonts and centered and left, right, justified, that sort of thing, which is kind of cool. I don't use it.
That too. Text Expander does that too.
Oh, does it? I hadn't noticed. Well, there
yes,
you go.
It does. Text Expander then has a different approach. It doesn't use that heads-up display. It simply always replaces your keystroke. It just does it. It makes a little noise and it does it straight up. No interaction whatsoever. So the plus side is no interaction whatsoever. The downside is you have to make absolutely positively sure you pick up something completely obscure that you could never possibly actually want to use without it becoming a long thing.
Do you want to know my trick for that? I don't know how to use semicolons in real life. I've never figured out when you're supposed to use them. So I always put a semicolon at the end of my snippets. And that way I know that's not something I'm ever going to write because I don't know when to use them in real life.
I have a similar trick. I put a star in front of the shortcut.
Oh, that's an interesting
idea. If I want to invoke Text Expander, I go star and then whatever the abbreviation is and then that bing.
I'd have to look at the keyboard to hit star though. That's a little extra work for me. I'm not willing
to. Yeah, but it forces me to only ever use Text Expander intentionally. I am now going to expand this.
Okay. By the way, I'm looking at Text Expander, and I don't see any way to change fonts or colors or anything. I'm looking at it, and maybe, a contents pane, plain text. Oh, there you go. You've got an option to change to formatted text.
Yes.
But there's no, you must have to create it somewhere else and paste it in, because there's no choices for, like, change this font to this.
Well, there's a little font button at the bottom, which lets me do font, and it gives me bold, underline, bigger, smaller.
Oh, okay. Okay, I see.
And
yeah, you're right. You're right. Got it. Okay.
Okay, now I got to change that back to plain text.
Yeah, that's what I just did. I was like, oh, got to fix that. The dangers of playing with it while we're on the air, right?
Exactly. So the other, let me see. A side effect of this instantly insert rather than giving a heads-up display is that you can't have any two shortcuts that have the same prefix as each other effectively.
Oh, so you couldn't have star CC and star CCC.
Exactly, because at star CC, it'll replace, and then you just end up with the C at the end.
Ah, and that's why you should put your character at the end, not the beginning. Because that's how it would know when you were done. So CC star and CCC star would be two different things. But star CC and star CCC are the same thing.
That's a good point.
That might help.
I may have to revise my technique.
Yeah, I think of the semicolon for me as I'm done. You know, now execute. It's the trigger that I'm adding to it. But one of the best things about Text Expander is you can have folders. So like I have a Honda Bob folder. So I just pull down and go, okay, which one? Oh, and it's a menu bar app. We should say that too. It's menu bar driven. So you can get to it from there and have folders.
But optionally. Because I remove it from the menu bar.
Oh. Why don't you like the menu bar app?
It's full. My menu bar is full. I do not need it up there. I know what my keystrokes are. I've been using them for years in Rapido Write. So I'm using the same keystrokes. I don't need it up there wasting room.
Oh, you don't make up new ones?
If I make up new ones, generally speaking, I use it mostly for filling in on Flickr groups where they ask you to use a certain comment code. And it's always FKOR followed by a two-letter abbreviation of the group's name.
Oh, okay.
So when I add a new one, I'll know what it is, because if the group is called Pathways, it'll be FKORPW.
Ah. See, I add and delete them all the time, like when I was working on the review for Clipboard Evolved. Boy, that was a lot of work. So I made one called CE semicolon, but I'm never going to remember that one later.
Okay, yeah. I can see how you may use it differently, all right.
You know what my two favorites are? Sorry, I want to tell you what my two favorites are because you wrote them both. When I first started using, they changed something in WordPress where if you did like a float right or float left of your images, it would, or it wasn't called float, it was a line right and a line left. It just slams it up against the text. It doesn't give any kind of a gap around it. And so you told me to write style equals quote, float colon left semicolon, there's that semicolon, margin colon 5px unquote. Well, I'm never going to remember that. So I threw it in Text Expander and I type AL semicolon or AR semicolon for a line left and a line right. And boom, all my pictures are perfect.
Yeah, there's a flaw in your use of the semicolon as your delimiter character. You now can't program. because in almost every programming language, semicolon means end of statement.
Ah.
So if you can't have any variable names ending in any of your abbreviations, or they're going to get barfed out if you try to write any code.
Dang, there goes my programming career. I was depending on that for the future, Bart.
Yeah, which is why I'm going to have to stick with my stars. But I may move them to the back. That's a good idea. Another big difference is in how you interact with them. So Text Expander is a preference pane, which I like. Very simple to remove it and so forth. And I think it's a sensible place to have it. Mm-hmm. Whereas Rapido Write was a standalone app. And it did actually have subfolders for organizing as well.
Yeah, it's a standalone app, but it runs sort of by itself. I mean,
it's in your startup.
Right. But yeah, you don't. I don't see it in my, like if I command tab, I don't see it running unless I have the window open.
No, but if you go to System Preferences Accounts.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I know. It's in my startup items. Right. But it's
in
not.
In your login items, which is how you were asking how do you get rid of it. And you could from there and it ain't going to start.
Right. But. Well, okay. Yeah, that was my earlier point. Now my new point. thank you. But my new point is when it's running as a startup item, you don't see it in your list of running applications. So it's not completely like a regular app.
No, it's running like a service. So, I mean, like every other operating system component. So you will see it in the activity monitor.
I see. How do you make folders in there? I don't see any folders.
In Rapido Write?
I've got no stinking folders.
If you click on the plus, there's a way to add folders, because I have folders in there, so it must be possible. Although maybe they got rid of that for Presto. That'd be funny as well.
Well, I'm looking at Rapido right now. I'm not sure where Presto is.
Okay, well, I managed to make folders, so it must be that little plus arrow. Does the plus sign not have a little down arrow next to it? So if you click the down arrow, you can make a plus folder instead of they may be called groups or something like that. They may not be called folders.
No, I hit plus and it creates a new abbreviation.
Okay, I'm going to have to launch it now.
I may have an older, newer version. I'm on version 2.2.
Okay, I have three icons at the bottom, a folder icon, a plus icon, and a minus icon.
What version are you running? I've got 2.2.2.
I am running 3.1.
Oh, man. And I probably can't get that unless you mail it to me.
Consider it done. Actually, hang on a second. If it's illegal, then we're not going to do it. But if it's legal, we will.
Right. We'll have to check on that. Now, the one thing I didn't like on Rapido Write was how long it takes to store an abbreviation. So you bring up the Rapido Write window, you create the abbreviation, and then you have to hit a command R to, I don't know, register it or something. I forget what the word is. And but then it's like a, I don't know, 5-second wait time that you do. Oh, it's update the memory is what command R means. And you have to wait like 5 seconds for it to do it.
Okay, my version of Rapido Write does not have that.
Oh, there you go. See, I'm booking myself too close. That's all it is. That 5 seconds, I'm booking myself too tight.
Yeah, so finally, the thing I like about Text Expander, which Rapido Write doesn't have, and I don't know if Presto has, you'll have to chime in, is syncing. I'm starting to sound like a stuck record here, but I use far too many computers not to have my abbreviation sync from one to the other.
Ah.
So with Text Expander, I'm using Mobile Me Syncing. And I have heard people say, I believe listener Connor in particular, that it can give trouble, but knock on wood, not yet for me. And if it does happen to give trouble, it's not the end of the world because you can use Dropbox for syncing as well.
Oh, that's excellent. You know,
that does involve a bit of hackery, but it can be done.
I'm a one Mac woman. I don't share anything across any Macs. I wish I could share it across my stupid, idiotic, moronic, I hate it so much I can't breathe VistaBox at work.
But, okay, look at that.
You know, that is something that bothers the heck out of me. There's like 28 different options for the Mac of these text expansion type programs, and there's one open source one that I can find for Windows called Texter, and it worked for probably, I don't know, 8 or 10 months, and then all of a sudden it just boogers up all the time. It gets in this mode where anything, any keystroke I do, pastes the most recent thing that I had in the copy buffer instead.
Okay, Rapido Write does that for me about 1 in 200 times.
Ooh, interesting.
Usually when the CPU is mad busy doing something like extracting a zip file or something, and it's pegged at 100%. And
it's like it's somehow, going, I'm far too busy to actually look that up. Here's something.
Yeah, have this. Maybe it uses the clipboard. Maybe it pulls whatever's in the clipboard, puts in the Rapido Write thing, calls paste, then sucks out the Rapido Write thing and puts back what it found. Maybe that's how it works.
Yeah, it might be.
And if it just gets all too tied up with the fact that the CPU is busy, it may not get around to replacing it or something, and you end up pasting in the wrong thing by mistake. But yeah, it does happen, and it's a weird one. The other thing that I have had happen with both RapidoWrite and Text Expander is they have mysteriously stopped working.
Really? I have never seen that.
Now, with RapidoWrite, it actually is very difficult to beat it back into submission. It usually involves 3 reboots.
Oh.
Or is it 2? Hang on till I count. So you go to System Preferences, you turn off Assistive Devices, because they all use that Assistive Devices thing feature. That's how they work.
Oh.
So you turn it off, you reboot, you go back in, you turn it on, you reboot, and then you re-enable RapidoWrite, and then it'll work.
Really? Have you figured out what triggers it to stop working?
Sometimes it OS X updates.
Huh. I have never had a hiccup on it. How interesting.
I've had many hiccups on it, but I'm using 3.1.
Yeah.
Then with Text Expander, I had one hiccup in the month I've been using it where it simply stopped working. And it, obviously the background process had crashed or something. And I went into my login items and simply double-clicked on Text Expander D, which is the Text Expander daemon. It restarted, and then all was well.
Hmm. So if you had to choose between the two, who do you pick?
You see,
you want the best
initially
of both?
Initially, I was very sure it was Text Expander.
Uh-huh.
And then I thought about it, but now I've thought about it again, and I'm definitely sure it's Text Expander.
What one thing would you add, or a couple things would you add to Text Expander from RapidoWrite, if it's that close?
The heads-up display technique, only done right, like RapidoWrite, not like Presto.
So where you would see it and get to choose
text
whether
Expander
to...
used that model and did it properly... Hands down victory, because I do much prefer that to the instantly insert model that Text Expander uses. But everything else about Text Expander is better.
Okay, so the main reason you like the heads-up display is you want to choose whether or not to expand at that time?
And also, I often have many starting with the same prefix. I build up a prefix code.
Okay.
So related ones will start with the same prefix, so if they show up, that's kind of handy.
Oh, so you'd rather have it come up and arrow down to the one that you want and hit a character turn than just finish typing the keystroke?
Yeah, with the obvious exception that the first one must be selected by default.
Okay.
Because in the RapidoWrite way, you would type one less letter than the abbreviation and then hit return. So your keystrokes are exactly the same as they would be with Text Expander.
But you have to hit that, without the down arrow.
Yeah, no need for down arrow on RapidoWrite. So if the abbreviation was, say, FK or NW, then I just type FK or N, and that would have the HUD display up. And 99 times out of 10, it's very good about always knowing what you want. I guess it's based on how often you use it or something, because it's certainly not alphabetic.
Hmm.
And just hit return, and it'll plop it in.
Hmm.
So that's no more keystrokes.
I'm not sure I like that. I think I prefer it the way Text Expander does it, where because I know what they are.
Hmm.
Then again, I have a bunch I don't know what they are.
I think it heavily depends on what you use it for. Because something I'm thinking of starting to use it for is for words with accented characters. And then Text Expander route is clearly the winner. Things like cliche and expose and that kind of thing. If I have all of them in there, I don't have to sit there worrying about how I make the silly line appear over the E. I'll just type it and Text Expander will magically make it into... posh looking cliche.
So you'd be using it essentially like the way in Microsoft Word you can put in a the autocorrect spelling thing. You would do that, just put the accent on it for you.
I'm pretty sure I'm going to start doing that. So I'll make a new folder for those kind of corrections and start sticking them in a new folder.
Now I'll tell you
I'll do them without a star character.
One thing I would like is a keystroke to launch Text Expander. Maybe I should read the instructions or make Dom do a review for me.
I have a vague memory of that being possible, although it's not something I really want to do in general. Let me see. Nothing like this makes for great radio, as they say. Preferences. Text Expander hotkey. Set hotkey. First option.
Okay, but that's hot.
Under preferences.
Oh. Wow. These Smile on My Mac guys are amazing. I can't believe it. I should do that.
Oh, hang on.
You find more
abbreviations
things?
Immediately when typed, at delimiter brackets keep delimiter, or at delimiter brackets abandon delimiter. So you could actually set up your delimiter and have it do the replacement at the delimiter and then delete the delimiter.
So I was reading that and I was trying to think, how is that any different than my, you know, AR semicolon? Semicolon's my
delimiter, but you have to put the semicolon on the back of every abbreviation.
Oh, but
whereas you could not have it there.
So I could set my delimiter as semicolon, and if I type AR, it's going to put it in?
No, you'd have to type AR semicolon, but the actual name of the snippet, the snippet's abbreviation would just be AR.
So they just saved us the bother of writing semicolon or star on every abbreviation.
And it also means it's easier to change from one to the other because they wouldn't be part of your abbreviations. They'd be separate.
Oh, yeah.
But then again, if you're trying to have stuff that doesn't have delimiters, like cliche, then that wouldn't work. So I'm going to leave that setting where it is.
But we are having fun looking at these menus. You know, Don would have read the menus first, but I wonder what would happen if I hit update. Oh, no, that's Text Expander. That one's safe to update. I like the Text Expander tells you how much time and effort you've saved. Since I installed it, it's expanded 1,990 snippets. I've saved 128,429 characters, and I've saved 5.35 hours if I were typing at 80 words per minute.
Hey, where's that gone? I don't see that.
That's under register.
Ah, there it is.
Now, I've had it for a long, long time. How much have you saved?
I've only been using it for a couple of weeks, so it's 0.74 hours at 80 words per minute.
Do you type 80 words per minute? You type pretty fast.
Yeah, see, the thing is, that's not really realistic because I'm using it to expand in big Flickr posting codes, which if I didn't have Rapido Write, it wouldn't be that I'd be typing them. It'd be that I'm going to the page, finding where it is on the page, copying it, then finding where I want to put it and pasting it. So it saved me way more
than that. Right.
Although it saved me 17,000 characters.
Holy cow, that's a lot in that length of time.
Well, yeah, it's 64 expanded snippets giving 17,859 characters because a lot of these Flickr codes are very long.
Oh, okay. So you've been using it like 1/50th the length of time I have, or 1/100th. I think it's probably been 2 years I've been using it, and you've saved more than 10% as much as me. Yeah, you should keep using Text Expander, clearly.
Yeah, it definitely suits my modus operandi, all right.
And the other thing is that Gene from Smile on My Mac is probably my favorite vendor to go visit at the Macworld Expo and places like that. She's a real peach. She's a lot of fun.
Yeah, she gave me a review copy, so I love her too.
Oh, now we're just going to sound like we like it because of her and free stuff.
Well, to be honest, there's a lot to be said for a responsive developer.
Absolutely. I had some problems at one point, and I whined a whole bunch to her, and she got me to the developers and got some changes put in. I think it used to be that when you started Text Expander, it went through a phase where it was real slow, and I actually stopped using it, and then they fixed it. I'm sure it was only because of me too.
Well, I love it when you have developers that are friendly, approachable, and responsive. I've sent some feedback to NetNewsWire today. Let's see if they respond.
Right. Yeah, that is definitely the big key there. And that is what I like about Shareware. And I hope you guys do know that I'm certain Bart would not have been saying nice things about Text Expander, even though he got it for free, that it would be, you would give an honest review.
Oh, absolutely. To be honest, I was about to buy it anyway.
Well, that's good. All right. Well, that's probably about enough time here. We should probably cut it off and let you, take a nap, eat dinner, whatever it is you're going to do next.
I don't know if it's made it to the U.S., but there's a TV show over here called The IT Crowd, which is some superb nerd humor. And so I'm off to a friend's house to watch seasons 1, 2, and 3, depending on how far we get. Probably won't get all the way through 1, 2, and 3 today. And have some Chinese.
Oh, sounds lovely.
Actually, you would love the IT Crowd. The catchphrase, they're basically the IT Crowd in a big corporation, and they're like down in the basement and everyone forgets they're there. And they always answer the phone with, "Hello, have you tried to turn it off and turn it on again?"
Great opening line. I should answer my phone like that.
Yeah. No, it's fantastic. It's just superb nerd humor.
I'll have to check it out, see if TiVo can find it.
Believe it or not, that's on primetime television in England.
Wow. Oh, that's excellent. Well, I'll check. We have BBC America over here. Maybe it's on there.
I think it's Channel 4.
But I don't think that's probably going to help me.
Yeah, well, our Channel 4 is probably different. No, as in we have a channel, which can be on any number on the dial, but it's called Channel 4.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, because it's not even the same from LA to San Diego around here. Channel 4 doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, well, see, we used to have so few stations. You had BBC One, BBC Two in the UK. Then a third one came out, which was ITV, which was always on number three on everyone's telly because it was the third station. And then the next station to come out called themselves Channel 4 because it was the fourth station to come into existence. So clearly it was going to be number four on everyone's dial.
Now, when was that? Like in 2005 when you got your fourth channel in Ireland?
We're talking UK.
Oh, okay. And when was that?
We got our fourth channel about 2000 and something, actually. Yeah, we have RT1, RT2, TV3, and then Tina G, which is an Irish language channel, which almost no one listens to.
Now, you are joking. You have more than four channels, don't you?
Not Irish ones. All the rest of the channels we get are like your channels, you know, CNN, Sky News.
Really?
Sky One. Oh, yeah, they're British. They're British or American.
Huh.
But we only have four of our own. Hey, Ireland's teeny. We have a population of 4 million.
Oh, my gosh. That's right. It's about the size of Orange County, I think.
You people have lakes bigger than this country.
Wasting all that space, right? All right. Well, we better cut it off. Are we on for next week?
I don't know. I have relatives coming over from Belgium, so I may be summoned home.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh, because I leave on Sunday to go to Hawaii, so I'm going to have to get the show out Saturday night, so we'll have to figure something out.
We may have to fall back on pre-recorded, Bart. We shall figure something out, though.
All right, sounds good. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, until whenever it is, happy computing.
Well, even though we were sleepy, Bart and I managed to go on for quite a long time there. We have so much fun talking to each other. I'm so glad all of you guys like it, too, because we just have a great time. Like you keep saying, it's one of our favorite times of the week, that's for sure. I was sound asleep after that. I got really sleepy. Oh, actually, no. First, we did the Mac Roundtable right after that, and I didn't fall asleep during that at all. But then I fell asleep after that. Anyway, it looks like I better wind up the show. The show will be out a day early next week because I'm not going to be able to do it on Sunday. So make sure if you're going to go watch the show, keep an eye on Twitter on Saturday during the day, which I guess is sort of the middle of the night, Saturday night for Australia. But I'm so confused by that. I can't even pretend what time it would be. So anyway, the show is always going to be at podfeet.com/live, at least for the time being while we're working on Stick'Em. And until we take a vote on whether we're going to stay on Stick'Em or whether we're going to go back to Ustream, we seem to have had a fairly successful show today. We had, it's so much fun in the chat room. We had Matt had his son William on, and Mark Shepard had his granddaughter. I forgot his granddaughter's name. She was on the show. We got to see Robert's puppy. We had Zach showing us some dogs in a video. I'm not quite sure what all that was, but it was a lot of fun. We had Michael King and Jonathan in there, and we have a great time. Such a good time in there. A lot of people watching, too, but those are the guys that did their video. So anyway, if you have time, normally at 5 p.m. GMT minus 8 on Sunday nights, just go to podfeet.com/live, and you'll be able to come in and join the fun. In the meantime, shoot me emails, especially those dumb questions, at allison@podfeet.com and follow me at Twitter at twitter.com/podfeet. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.